We're all being told by the government or the powers that be how much power we can have, who's going to have their heads chopped off, who isn't. And that seems to be, you know, unchanged.
So you wouldn't, if you were directing one of the canon, you wouldn't update it, put it in a totalitarian state with those terrible scenes, opening scenes where people all seem to have a bicycle and everyone has suitcases which obviously have nothing in them.
Yes, that's a bit too light. Oh, God, that's a terrible view of modern productions.
Yes, I'm sorry, touch cynical there.
I think all productions have to deal with the period that they were written in and the period that we're in now. I think everything has to answer. And something about Gilbert and Sullivan seems to get away with that, actually, because everybody seems to be able to connect with it pretty emotionally immediately.
Well, it's probably worth pointing out for listeners at home that tonight's production, which is only semi-staged in that it hasn't got any front cloths or back cloths, it's being fully acted and fully and eloquently performed, not in the costume of Merry England of King Henry VIII's day, but I think quite sensibly in the costumes of the late 1880s, which of course was when it was first performed.
Yes, and you get a great view of that. So the really faux sort of ancient language, the thou and the these and the thoses that they're using, sound just as strange in 19th century costume as they might have to the 19th century or the early 20th century audience. And I think that's quite interesting. Also, somehow you feel that the sexual explorations of Phoebe and her attempts to maybe to be all evening with a gentleman are just beginning to be the burgeoning element of the 20th century is beginning to come through, isn't it? You can see that very clearly. And watching the yeomen, of course, they look marvellous dressed in red as sort of jacks of hearts, really, of the whole society and what upkeeps the world.
Well, now, you having been so generous in giving all your time to Gilbert and Sullivan, I was supposed to ask you all sorts of things about what you, Fiona Shaw, are up to. So can, in less than a minute, tell me about changing the subject now, perhaps rather clumsily, The Rape of Lucretia. You're directing that shortly, and you're not only directing it, are you?
I'm helping my designer design it at the moment, but it doesn't happen until next year. But we've got to get all the work done now, so we're designing it before Christmas. We hope for Glyndebourne for next year.
So this is a real night off. What have you gleaned from this production?
I've seen a lot. Colour is definitely the way through. If you're going to have big audiences, you need very good colour. That's definitely the future.
Fiona Shaw, thank you so much. I must let you get back to your seat and
lovely to be here.
Find out what's going to happen Phoebe and Wilfred and Elsie and Jack. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Well, joining me now, just sort of leaning in to my little eyrie, is, I'm very happy to say, Mary King, singer and voice coach. If you watch Cardiff Singer of the World, you'll know what an eloquent, wise and generous commentator she is on all things vocal. And like me, Mary believes that anyone can sing. Unlike me, she knows how to teach people to do it. And Mary, you've been running workshops during the proms for people to come along and participate in music from some of the bigger choral works that have been on offer this season. So you've already done, you've ticked the box of Beethoven's Ode to Joy, Berlioz's Requiem, the Grand Messe des Morts, and today you've been taking people through the music, The Yeomen of the Guard.
Yes.
How's it been going?
Fantastic. 200 people dividing up Elsie and Jack Point. That has to be heard and seen to be believed. It's absolutely fantastic. But we've also done some of the great ensemble moments. There are fantastic ensemble moments, obviously, in this piece. So particularly the finale is absolutely brilliant. So good fun. 200 people doing that. It's great.
Now, it's very topical at the moment in the aftermath of the triumphant Olympics. There's supposed to be a great renaissance in national physical fitness inspired by Brad and Jessica and Team GB. There's certainly already a great renaissance in the joy of choral singing, non-professionally.
Yes.
Do you think it's going to continue? Is there hope?
I really think it is. I mean, I think once people, once people really engage with singing, I mean, after all, now you sort of have a kind of carte blanche to love any music you like and sing any music you like. It's a very broad church, you know, so it doesn't really matter if it's 60s pop tunes or if it's, you know, a Berlioz or Bach. It's all got a certain place, a part to play. And I think that has liberated a lot of people who don't think too much of themselves as singers, professional singers or professional choristers or amateur high standard choristers. Yeah, I think everybody can join in at some level.
And of course, you haven't finished with the prom season. You're going to get to grips with Nixon in China.
China is absolutely marvellous. So in 2 weeks' time, on the 2nd of September, yes, I've got a two-hour workshop. I don't quite know what we'll get through in that time because obviously it's rhythmically difficult as well as pitch-wise quite tricky.
What do you say to somebody who says to you, I can't sing in tune, because I don't believe that people can't.
No, but I do think that a lot of people are, if damaged is almost a word I'd use, by being told when they're very young at school that they shouldn't sing because, or they've got to sing at the back, or they've got to mouth the words. And I think a lot of the problems that you have with poor out-of-tune singing are to do with tension. And if you get rid of the tension and liberate yourself from the anxiety of doing it wrong, actually it gets an awful lot better. I mean, that's a bit of a glib answer, because obviously there are many answers according to different people, but I think it's possible for everybody to sing.
Our last question, expecting the answer yes, I warn you. Are you enjoying the singing tonight as much as I am?
Yes, I am, absolutely. It's great.
Great. Thank you very much, Mary.
Thank you.
Enjoy the second
Thank
half.
You.
Now, before we return to the Tower of London, let's look ahead in proms terms to next Sunday, which sees the return to the proms of one of the world's great youth orchestras, the Gustav Mahler Jugendorchester. Here are a few words from a couple of its talented members.
My name is Ana, I'm Spanish, and I play double bass with the Gustav Mahler Jugendorchester.
My name's Finley, and I'm from London, and I play the French horn in the Gustav Mahler Youth Orchestra. The orchestra was founded by Claudio Bardo. This year, the Gustav Mahler Orchestra has its 25th anniversary, and it was recently made a UNICEF ambassador. Being a member of the Gustav Mahler Youth Orchestra is something really special. It brings all the best people from over Europe. Music's like universal language. There's no barriers when playing in the orchestra.
I come from a really small village in Spain, and I never really played with any great orchestras, the Gustav Mahler Orchestra, and I never played in such a good halls like that. And my first tour, it was like a dream, and I played in Concertgebouw and Mahler's Third Symphony and Musikverein, and yeah, it's one of my best memories.
Personally, the piece in the programme that we're doing at the proms that I'm most looking forward to is probably Lavaus. The first time I played it, I just remember being completely overwhelmed by the piece.
Really looking forward to Rosenkavalier. I really like Strauss, and it's really exciting to play. You can really give all your heart and all your emotions.
I'm most looking forward to playing on my home turf, so to speak, at the proms. The atmosphere there, when it's packed out, it's just an amazing feeling sitting there. It looks so much bigger when you're actually sitting on stage, like to watching it on TV. It's just a really amazing experience, and there's great atmosphere there.
And Anna and Finley are assured of an extremely warm proms welcome. You can hear them and the other members of the Gustav Mahler Jugendorchester next Sunday in a programme of Wagner, Berg, Strauss and Ravel with conductor Daniele Gatti. Well, Fiona Shaw, if I can quote her one more time, as soon as she arrived so excitedly into the box to talk to me, she said, "Music's cool, isn't it?" And I think she's dead right. We're all quite warm in here, must be said, but with excitement. It's a good kind of warm, and music is indeed cool. She said also, as you'll have heard, that directing opera has quite a few challenges, but directing a semi-staged concert version of an opera for the BBC Proms at the Royal Albert Hall has plenty more. It can be a real headache. Here's tonight's director, Martin Duncan.
Yes, these ones have special challenges, as we say, for the director. You're not given a lot of time. That's one thing that perhaps people don't realise. We had, in fact, 3 days to stage the piece up on its feet before we met the orchestra. The singers have learned it all off the book, which is a major challenge, really. Often in theatre, or if you're doing an opera production, you'd get 3.5, 4.5 weeks before you meet the orchestra and do all the staging stuff on stage with costumes. Then we only have really one afternoon at the Albert Hall without the orchestra in order to walk through all the entrances and exits. And that's, of course, very difficult because the way we're using it, we're using the side steps, we're coming up through these, what they're called vomitories, through the promenaders up on the front of the stage, and the long entrance where normally the conductor and the orchestra are coming on, that's called the bull run. But of course, you go off one entrance and then you're backstage at the Albert Hall in a complete maze of corridors, and people often, you never see again, actually, they get lost. Obviously, they've had a lot of time learning the music, and that's great. But, you know, in 3 days, I think to do what we've done with this one is fairly amazing. We've given them choreography, too, and bits of movement, and they've got to get all the text. You know, there's a lot in W.S. Gilbert text, too, to actually plumb. So that's a challenge. Of course, the same challenge is the conductor and the orchestra are behind you and not in a pit in front of you. So you can't just look down and see Jane waving the baton. We have to have strategically placed monitors around the hall and hope that the singers can catch the beat in those. And often with digital monitors, they're slightly behind the beat. That's another issue which has to be solved. So yes, there's quite a few challenges to get over in a very short time.
Director Martin Duncan, 3 days blocking. I can't believe it. And you would never know, I promise you. And there will be proof of this. If you're not enjoying the performance on Radio 3 enough already, you can see what he means on August the 25th, when tonight's performance will be broadcast on BBC Two. So do look out for that. But meanwhile, let's go back to The Prisoner in the Tower as we return to Act Two of this performance of Gilbert and Sullivan's darkest opera, The Yeomen of the Guard. After marrying a blindfolded stranger, Colonel Fairfax has escaped the executioner's block and disappeared. Or has he? When we last saw him, he'd shaved off his beard and was calling himself Leonard Merrill, Yeoman of the Guard. Meanwhile, jester Jack Point has to admit that his beloved Elsie's gone and married Fairfax, and jailer Wilfred Shadbolt knows his beloved Phoebe has gone off him, so both men are feeling very hard done by. They conspire to claim, most plausibly, that Wilfred has caught Fairfax in the act of diving into the Thames and shot him with an arquebus. Even more meanwhile, Elsie is being wooed by the man she thinks of as Leonard Merrill and is falling in love. So when it's announced that Fairfax has not only been pardoned, but is actually alive and coming to claim his bride, she despairs. By the time everything is sorted out, two engaged couples stand beside the rejoicing newlyweds, Elsie and Fairfax. Doughty Dame Carruthers has backed Sergeant Merrill into a corner, and Phoebe has returned, sulkily, to the arms of the uncouth Wilfred, which leaves only poor Jack Point to sing Misery Me. The BBC Concert Orchestra and the BBC Singers are ready on stage, and now, in a minute, will be Jane Glover to conduct Act Two of The Yeoman of the Guard. And as we begin, imagine that virtual curtain going up at the Savoy Theatre. Jack Point is hoping to bend Wilfred to his will by offering him free gesturing lessons.
Thank you. The Merry Jests of Hugh Ambrose. Number 7,863. The Poor Wit and the Rich Counselor. A certain poor wit, being an hungered, did meet a well-fed counselor. What? Marry, fool, quoth the counselor, whither away? In truth, said the poor wag, in that I've eaten naught these 2 days, I do wither away, and that right rapidly. The counselor laughed hugely and gave him a sausage. The counselor was easier to please than my new master, the lieutenant. Oh, I should like to take post under that counselor. Oh, 'tis but melancholy mumming when poor, heartbroken, jilted Jack Point must needs turn to Hugh Ambrose for original light humor.
Master Point?
Ha! Friend jailer, that was! Jailer that never shalt be more! Come! Take heart, smile, laugh, wink, twinkle! Thou tormentor that tormentest none! Thou racker that rackest not, thou pincher out of place! Come, take heart and be merry as I am! As I am!
Aye, it's well for thee to laugh. Thou hast a good post and hast cause to be merry.
Cause? Have we not all cause? Is not the world a big butt of humour into which all who will may drive a gimlet? See, I am a salaried wit. And is there aught in nature more ridiculous? A poor, dull, heartbroken man who must needs be merry or he will be whipped. Who must jest you and rejoice lest he perish. Who must jest you, jibe you, quip you, crank you, rack you, riddle you from hour to hour, from day to day, from year to year, lest he dwindle, perish, starve, pine, and die. Why, when there's naught else to laugh at, I laugh at myself till I ache for it.
Yet I have often thought that a jester's calling would suit me to a hair.
Thee? Would suit thee, thou death's head and crossbones?
I have a pretty wit, a light, airy, joysome wit, spiced with anecdotes of prison cells in the torture chamber. Oh, a very delicate wit. Now, I have tried it on many a prisoner, and there have been some who smiled. It is not easy to make a prisoner smile, and it should not be difficult to be a good jester, seeing that thou art one.
Difficult? Nothing easier. Nothing easier. Attend, and I will prove it to thee. Oh, a private buffoon is a light-hearted loon if you listen to popular rumour. From the morn to the night he's so joyous and bright and he bubbles with wit and good humour. He's so quaint and so terse both in prose and in verse, yet though people forgive his transgression, there are one or two rules that all family fools must observe if they love their profession. There are one or two rules, half a dozen maybe, that all family fools of whatever degree must observe if they love their profession. If you wish to succeed as a jester, you need to consider each person's auricular. What is all right for B would quite scandal, I see, for C is so very particular. And D may be dull, and E's very thick skull is as empty of brains as a ladle, while F is F sharp, and will cry with a carp that he's known your best joke since his cradle. When you're human, they flout, you can't let yourself go, and it does put you out when a person says, oh, I have known little jokes since my cradle. If your master is surly from getting up early and tempers are short in the morning, an inopportune joke is enough to provoke him to give you at once a month's warning, then if you refrain, he is at you again, for he likes to get value for money. He'll ask then and there, with an insolent stare, if you know that you're paid to be funny. It adds to the task of a merriment's place when your principal asks with a scowl on his face,
if you know that you're paid to be funny. Comes a bishop, maybe, or a solemn DD, oh, beware of his anger provoking. Better not pull his head or stick pins in his chair, he don't understand practical joking. If the jester to crack of an orthodox smack, he may get a bland smile from these sages, but should they by chance be imported from France, half a crown is docked out of your wages. It's a general rule, though your zeal it may quench. If the family fool tells a joke that's too French, half a crown is docked out of his wages. Though your head it may rack with a bilious attack and your senses with toothache you're losing, don't be mopey and fat, they don't fine you for that if you're properly quaint and amusing. Though your wife ran away with a soldier that day and took with her a trifle of money, bless your heart, they don't mind, they're exceedingly kind. They don't blame you so long as you're funny. It's a comfort to feel if you're punished and flit. Though you suffer a deal, they don't mind it a bit. They don't blame you so long as you're funny.
So thou wouldst be a jester, eh? Aye. Now listen, my sweetheart, Elsie Maynard, was secretly wed to this Fairfax half an hour ere he escaped.
Oh, she did well.
She did nothing of the kind, so hold thy peace and perpend. Now listen, all the while he liveth, she is dead to me, and I to her. So my gibes and jokes notwithstanding, I am the saddest and sorriest dog in England.
Thou art a very dull dog indeed.
Now, if thou wilt swear that thou didst shoot this Fairfax while he was trying to swim across the river, it needs but the discharge of an arquebus on a dark night, and that he sank and was seen no more, I'll make thee the very Archbishop of Jesters, and that in 2 days' time. Now, what sayest thou?
I am to lie?
Heartily! But thy lie must be a lie of circumstance, which I will support with the testimony of eyes, ears, and tongue.
And thou wilt qualify me as a jester?
Oh, as a jester among jesters. I'll teach thee all my original songs, my self-constructed riddles, my own ingenious paradoxes. Nay more, I'll reveal to thee the source whence I get them. Now, what sayest thou?
Why, if it be but a lie thou wantest of me, I hold it cheap enough. I say yes, it is a bargain.
Hereupon we both agreed, or that we two do agree to be secure by solemn deed, to prevent all elemental, you and Elsie are to call with a story grim and gory, how this Fairfax died and all. I declare to you to swear to, I to swear to, I declare to, I to swear to, I declare to, I to swear to, you to swear to, I to swear to. Tell a tale of cock and bull, of the means in detail full. Tremendous, what a tale of cock and bull. In return for my own part, I am making undertaking to instruct me in the art, art amazing, wonder raising of a jester, jesting free, proposition, high ambition, and a lively one I'll be. Wag-a-wagging, never flagging, wag-a-wagging, never flagging, wag-a-wagging, never flagging, wag-a-wagging, never flagging, wag-a-wagging. Tell a tale of cock and bull, of the means in detail full.
2 days gone, and no news of poor Fairfax. Of the dolts! They seek him everywhere save within 12 yards of his dungeon. So, I am free! Free. Pah! The tower bonds were but a thread of silk compared with these conjugal fetters, which I, fool that I was, placed upon mine own hands. From the one I broke readily enough. How to break the other?
Free from his fetters grim, free to depart, free both in life and limb, in all but heart. Bound to an unknown bride for good and ill. Is not one so tied, a prisoner still, a prisoner still. Is not one so tied, a prisoner still. In fetters held till his last hour, gyves that no smith can weld, no rust devour. Although a monarch's hand had set him free, of all the captive band, the
Sergeant Merrill, and how fares thy pretty charge, Elsie Maynard?
Well enough, sir. She's quite strong again and leads us tonight.
Thanks to Dame Carruthers' kind nursing, eh?
Aye, deuce take the old witch. It was but a sorry trick you played me, sir, to bring the fainting girl to me. It gave the old lady an excuse for taking up her quarters in my house. And for the last 2 years, I've shunned her like the plague. Another day of it, and she would have married me. Good Lord, here she is again. I'll e'en go.
Nay, Sergeant Merrill, don't go. I have something of grave import to say to thee.
It's coming.
In faith, I think I'm not wanted here.
Nay, Master Leonard, I've naught to say to thy father that his son may not hear.
True, I'm one of the family. I had forgotten.
'Tis about this Elsie Maynard. A pretty girl, Master Leonard.
Aye, fair as a peach blossom. What then?
She hath a liking for thee, if I mistake not.
By my heart, she's as dainty a little maid as you'll find on a midsummer day's mark.
Then be warned in time and give not thy heart to her. Oh, I know what it is to give my heart to one who will have none of it.
Aye, she knows all about that. And why is my boy to take heed of her? She's a good girl, Dame Carruthers.
Good enough for aught I know, but she's no girl. She's a married woman.
Married woman? Tush, old lady. She's promised to Jack Point, the lieutenant's new jester.
Tush in thy teeth, old man. As my niece Kate sat by her bedside today, this Elsie slept. And as she slept, she moaned and groaned and turned this way and that way. And how shall I marry one I have never seen, quoth she. Then, 100 crowns, quoth she. Then, is it certain he will die in an hour, quoth she. Then, I love him not, and yet I am his wife, quoth she. Is it not so, Kate?
Aye, aunt, 'tis even so.
Art thou sure of all this?
Aye, sir, for I wrote it all down on my tablets.
Now, mark my words, it was of this Fairfax she spake, and he is her husband, or I'll swallow me kirtle.
Is this true, sir?
True? Why, the girl was raving. Why should she marry a man who had but an hour to live?
Marry? There be those who would marry but for a minute rather than die old maids.
I know one of them.
Strange adventure, maiden wedded to a groom she's never seen. Groom about to be beheaded in a Harlan tower green. Tower green. Groom in dreary dungeon line. Groom as good as dead or dying. For a pretty maiden's fine. Pretty maid of
So, my mysterious bride is none other than this winsome Elsie. By my hand, 'tis no such ill plunge in fortune's lucky bag. I might have fared worse with my eyes open. But she comes. Now to test her principles, 'tis not every husband who has a chance of wooing his own wife. Mistress Elsie.
Master Leonard.
So thou leavest us tonight.
Yes, Master Leonard. I have been kindly tended, and I almost fear I am loath to go.
And this Fairfax, wast thou glad when he escaped?
Why, truly, Master Leonard, it is a sad thing when a young and gallant gentleman should die in the very fullness of his life.
Then when thou didst faint in my arms, it was for joy at his safety?
It may be so. I was highly wrought, and I am but a girl, and so when I am highly wrought, I faint.
Now dost thou know I am consumed with a parlous jealousy.
Thou? But of whom?
Why, of this Fairfax, surely.
Of Colonel Fairfax?
Aye. Shall I be frank with thee? Elsie, I love thee ardently, passionately. Elsie, I have loved thee these 2 days, which is a long time. And I would fain join my life with thine.
Master Leonard, thou art jesting.
Jesting? May I shrivel into raisins if I jest? I love thee with a love that is a fever, with a love that is a frenzy, with a love that eateth up my heart. What sayest thou? Thou wilt not let my heart be eaten up.
Oh, mercy, what am I to say?
Dost thou love me, or hast thou been insensible these 2 days?
I love all brave men.
Nay, there is love in excess. I thank heaven there are many brave men in England, but if thou lovest them all, why withdraw my thanks?
I love the bravest best, but, sir, I may not listen. I am not free. I am a wife.
Thou a wife? Whose? His name? His days are numbered. Oh. Nay, his grave is dug and his epitaph set up. Come, his name!
Oh, sir, keep my secret, for it is the only barrier that fate could set up between us. My husband is none other than Colonel Fairfax.
The greatest villain unhung. The most ill-favored, ill-mannered, ill-natured, ill-omened, ill-tempered dog in Christendom.
It is very like. But he is not to me, for I never saw him. I was blindfolded, and he was supposed to have died within the hour, and he did not die, and I am wedded to him, and my heart is broken.
He was to have died, but he did not die. The scoundrel, the perjured, traitorous villain. Thou shouldst have insisted on his dying first, to be sure. 'Tis the only way with these fair facts.
I now wish I had.
Bloodthirsty little maiden. Listen to me. Be mine. He will never know. He dares not show himself. And if he dare, what art thou to him? Fly with me, Elsie. We shall be married tomorrow, and thou shalt be the happiest wife in England.
Master Leonard, I am amazed. Is it thus that brave soldiers speak to poor girls? Oh, for shame, for shame. I am wed, and not the less because I love not my husband. I am a wife, sir. I have a duty, and... Sir, thy words terrify me. They are not honest. They are wicked words and unworthy thy great and brave heart. Oh, shame upon thee. Shame upon thee.
Nay, Elsie, I did but jest. I spake but to try thee.
Hark, what was that, sir? Why, an arc was fired from the wharf, unless I must mistake.
Strange, and at such an hour. What can it mean?
Now what can that have been? A shot so late at night. Enough to cause a fight. What can the portent mean? That shot, at once the truth declare. My lord, 'twas I, to rashly judge, forbear. My lord, 'twas me, to rashly judge, forbear. Like a ghost his vigil keeping,
or a spectre on appalling,
I beheld a figure creeping.
I should rather call it crawling.
He was creeping,
he was crawling,
he was creeping, creeping,
crawling.
He was creeping,
he was crawling,
he was creeping, creeping,
crawling.
Not a moment's hesitation, I myself upon him flung. With a honeyed exclamation to his draperies I hung. Then we closed with one another in a rough and tumble smother. Colonel Fairfax and no other was the man to whom I clung.
Colonel Fairfax and no other, Colonel Fairfax and no other.
After mighty tug and tussle,
it resembled more a struggle.
He by dint of stronger muscle,
or by some infernal juggle,
from my clutches quickly sliding,
I should rather call it slipping,
with a view no doubt of hiding,
or escaping to the shipping,
with a gasp and with a quiver,
I describe it as a shiver.
Down he dived into the river, and alas, I cannot swim.
It's not swim,
down he dived into the river. Ingenuity is catching with the king of his pleasing up with us from sentry snatching.
I should rather call it seizing.
In an ounce or two of lead, I dispatched him through the head.
In an ounce or two of lead, I dispatched him through the head.
I discharged him without winking. Little time I lost in sinking. Like a stone, I saw him sinking.
I should say a lump of lead.
Like a stone, I saw him sinking.
I should say a lump of lead.
Like a stone, my boy, I said.
Like a heavy lump of lead.
Like a stone, my boy, I said.
Like a heavy lump of lead.
Anyhow, the man is dead. Where the stone will not prepare.
Anyhow, the man is dead.
The river must be dragged, no time be lost. The body must be found at any cost.
this attend without undue delay. So set to work with what dispatch ye may.
Yes, yes, we'll set to work with what dispatch ye may.
Sweetheart, be comforted. This Fairfax was but a pestilent fellow. And as he had to die, he might as well die thus as any other way. 'Twas a good death.
Still, he was my husband. And had he not been, he was nevertheless a living man. And now he is dead. And so, by your leave, my tears may flow unchidden, Master Point.
And thou didst see all this? Aye. With both eyes at once, this and that. The testimony of one eye is naught.
He may lie.
But when it is corroborated by the other, it is good evidence that none may gainsay. Here are both present in court, ready to swear to him.
But art thou sure it was Colonel Fairfax? Saw you his face?
Aye. And a plaguey, ill-favoured face, too. A very hangdog face. A felon face. A face to fright the headsman himself and make him strike awry. Oh, a plaguey, bad face. Take my word for it. How they laugh. 'Tis ever thus with simple folk. An accepted wit has but to say, pass the mustard, and they roar their ribs out.
If ever I come to life again, thou shalt pay for this, Master Point.
Now, Elsie, thou art free to choose again, so behold me. I am young and well-favored. I have a pretty wit. I can jest you, jibe you, quip you, crank you, rap
you. Tush, man, thou knowest not how to woo. 'Tis not to be done with time-worn jests and threadbare sophistries, with quips, conundrums, rhymes, and paradoxes. 'Tis an art in itself, and must be studied gravely and conscientiously.
A man who would woo a fair maid should prentice himself to the trade and study all day in methodical way how to flatter, cajole, and persuade. He should prentice himself at 14 and practice from morning to e'en. And when he's of age, if he win, I'll engage, he may capture the heart of a queen, the heart of a queen.
Steel, which all may attain if we will, but every jack he must study the math. He wants to make sure of his jill. He wants to make sure of his jill. If he's made the best use of his time, his twig is okay. But every bird may come down at his word, whatever its plumage or climb. He must learn that the thrill of a touch may mean little or nothing or much. It's an instrument rare to be handled with care and ought to be treated as such. Ought to be treated as such. It is purely a matter of skill, which all may attain if they will. But every jack he must study the net if he wants to make sure of his jill. He wants to make sure of his
ridiculous side. It may draw you a tear or a box on the ear. You can never be sure till you've tried. Never be sure till you've tried.
It is truly a matter of skill, which only a tinkerer will. But every Jack, he must study the math if he wants to be sure of his jib. He wants to be sure of his jib.
Now listen to me, 'tis done thus. Mistress Elsie, there is one here whom, as thou knowest, lovest thee right well.
Oh, that he does right well!
He is but a man of poor estate, but he hath an honest, loving heart. He will be a true and trusty husband to thee, and if thou wilt be his wife, thou shalt lie curled up in his heart, like a little squirrel in its nest.
Oh, 'tis a pretty figure. A maggot in a nut lies closer, but squirrel will do.
He knoweth that thou wast a wife, an unloved and unloving wife, and his poor heart was close to breaking. But now that thine unloving husband is dead, and thou art free, he would fain pray that thou wouldst hearken unto him, and give hope that thou wouldst one day be his.
He presses her hand, and he whispers in her ear, "Odds bodikins, what does it mean?"
Now, sweetheart, tell me, wilt thou be this poor good fellow's wife?
If the good, brave man, is he a brave man?
So men say.
That's not true, but let it pass.
If the brave man would be content with a poor, penniless, untaught maid.
Widow, but let that pass.
I will be a true and loving wife, and that with my heart of hearts.
My own dear love!
What's all this? Brother, brother, it is not seemly.
Oh, I can't let that pass. Hold enough, Master Leonard. An advocate should have his fee, but methinks thou art overpaying thyself.
Nay, that is for Elsie to say. I promised thee I would show thee how to woo, and herein lies the proof of the virtue of my teaching. Go thou and apply it elsewhere.
When the wooer goes a wooing, what is true than his joy?
Aid and harshing, all pursuing, boldly blushing, bravely coy. Bravely
cry,
boldly
blush.
Oh, the happy days of doing.
Oh, the happy days of doing.
Oh, the sighing and the sewing. When a wooer goes a wooing. Oh, the sweets that never cloy.
When a brother leaves his sister for another, sister weeps. Tears that trickle, tears that blister, tis but mickle, sister eeps, tears that tremble, tears that blister.
Oh, the doing and undoing.
Oh, the doing and undoing.
Oh, the sighing and the sewing. When a brother goes a wooing, and a sobbing sister. Jester is outwitted, feelings fester, heart is led. Food for fishes, only fitted, jester wishes he was dead. Food for fishes, only fitted,
jester wishes he was dead.
Oh, the doing and undoing, oh, the sighing and the sewing, when a jester goes away, and he wishes he was dead. Oh, the doing and undoing, oh, the sighing and the sewing, when a jester goes away, and he wishes he was dead.
I've done everything I could think of to make folk believe I was his loving sister, and this is his gratitude. Before I pretend to be sister to anybody again, I'll turn nun and be sister to everybody, one as much as another.
In tears, eh? What a plague art thou grizzling for now?
Thou hast often wept for jealousy. Well, 'tis for jealousy I weep now. Yellow bilious jaundice jealousy. Make the most of that, Master Wilfred.
Oh, I have never given thee cause for jealousy. The lieutenant's cookmaid and I are but the merest gossips.
Oh, jealous of thee? Bah! I am jealous of no craven cock on a hill who crows about what he do when he daren't. I am jealous of another and a better man than thou. Set that down, Master Wilfred. And he is to marry Elsie Maynard, the little pale fool. Set that down, Master Wilfred. And my heart is well nigh broken. There. Thou hast all of it. Make the most of it.
The man thou lovest is to marry Elsie Maynard? Well, that is no other than thy brother, Leonard Merrill.
Oh, mercy, what have I said?
Sir, what manner of brother is this, thou lying little jade? Speak! Who is this man that thou hast called brother, and fondled, and coddled, and kissed, with my connivance? Oh, Lord, with my connivance. Should it be this Fairfax? It is! It is this accursed Fairfax! It's Fairfax! Fairfax, who I...
Who thou hast just shot through the head and who lies at the bottom of the river!
Ah. I may have been mistaken. We are but fallible mortals, the best of us. But I'll make sure...
Stay! One word. I think it cannot be Fairfax. Mind, I say I think. Because thou hast just slain Fairfax. But whether he be Fairfax or no Fairfax, he is to marry Elsie, and as thou hast shot him through the head and he is dead, be content with that, and I will be thy wife.
Is that sure?
Aye, for sure, for there's no help for it. Thou art a very brute, but even brutes must marry, I suppose.
My beloved! Oh. Phoebe, rejoice, for I bring great glad tidings. Colonel Fairfax's reprieve was signed 2 days since, but was kept foully and maliciously apart by Secretary Portwhistle, who designed that it should arrive only after the Colonel's death. It hath just come to hand and is now in the Lieutenant's possession.
Then the Colonel is free?
Aye.
Oh, kiss me, my dear, kiss me again and again!
Odds bobs! Death of my life! Are you mad? Am I mad? Are we all mad?
Oh, my dear, I am well nigh crazy!
away from him, thou hussy!
Thou jade!
Thou kissing, clinging cockatrice! And as for thee, sir, the devil take thee. I'll rip thee like a herring for this. I'll skin thee for it. I'll cleave thee to the chine. Oh, Phoebe! Who is this man?
Peace, fool. He is my brother.
Another brother? Are there any more of them? Produce them all at once and let me know the worst.
This is the real Leonard Dalt. The other was but his substitute. The real Leonard, I say, my father's own son.
How do I know this? Has he brother writ large on his brow? I mistrust thy brothers, for thou art a false jade.
Now, Wilfred, be just. Truly did I deceive thee before, but it was to save a precious life, and save it not for me, but for another. They are to be wedded this very day. Is this not enough for thee? Come, I am thy Phoebe, thy very own, and we will be wed in a year, or two, or three at the most. Is that not enough for thee?
Phoebe, hast thou heard the brave news?
Aye, father.
I'm mad with joy. Why, what's all this?
Oh, father, he discovered our secret through my folly, and the price of his silence is...
Phoebe's heart!
Dear, no. Phoebe's hand.
It's the same thing.
Is it?
Tis a pity, but the colonel had to be saved at any cost. And as thy folly revealed our secret, thy folly must e'en suffer for it. Dame Carruthers.
So this is a plot to shield this archfiend, and I have detected it. A word from me and three heads would roll from their shoulders.
Nay, Colonel Fairfax is reprieved. Yet if my complicity in his escape were known, plague on the old meddler, there's nothing for it. Hush! Pretty one. Such bloodthirsty words ill become those cherry lips.
Sergeant Merrill.
Why, look ye, Jack. For many a month now I've thought to myself, there's a snug love saving up in that middle-aged bosom for someone, and why not for thee? That's me. So take heart and tell her, that's thee, that thou, that's me, lovest her. Thee. And... Well, I'm a miserable old man, and I've done it, and that's me. But not a word about Fairfax. The price of thy silence
Merrill's heart?
No, Merrill's hand.
It's the same thing.
Is it?
Rapture, when love's votary flushed with capture seeks the notary. Joy and jollity, the hen is polity, reigns frivolity. Rapture, rapture, joy and jollity, the hen is polity, reigns frivolity. Rapture, rapture.
Doleful, doleful, when humanity with its soulful of satanity, courting clivity, down declivity, sees captivity. Doleful, doleful, courting clivity, down declivity, sees captivity. Doleful, doleful.
Joyful, joyful, when virginity seeks for coyful man's affinity, faint of flowery, bright and bold. It's a dowry, joyful, joyful, faint of flowery, bright and bowery. It is a dowry, joyful, joyful.
Ghastly, ghastly, when man sorrowful, firstly, lastly, of tomorrowful, after tarrying, yields to Harry, goes a marry. Ghastly, ghastly,
joyful, joyful,
ghastly, ghastly,
joyful, joyful,
ghastly, ghastly,
joyful, joyful, ghastly,
ghastly, ghastly.
Rapture, 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 rap
Thank you. massive rock, unmoved by sentimental shock.
I will...